I hope this doesn't sound too elusive, but I think doing it is a contextual exercise. I mean, I don't think that there's, you know, one size fits all, you know, that's for sure. But I think that there are a number of principles that you can apply or a number of standards over against which any kind of contextual expression or practice or whatever it might be needs to be measured. One of these is this one is a little vague. Some of the others are clearer. Does this expression or this practice, whatever it might be, does it harmonize with the rest of the gospel? You know, it's a loosey-goosey kind of intuitional thing. But that's the first point. Does it harmonize with the gospel? I mean, that's the thing with Arius. Arius' idea, great contextual theology, but it didn't harmonize with the faith of the church. You know, now harmonize. This is something Peter Fahn points out. Harmonize doesn't mean necessarily it's done in thirds. You know, lovely harmony. Sometimes it can be contrapuntal. And sometimes it can be, you know, it can challenge the tradition and so forth. But nevertheless, you know, does it somehow, is it in harmony with the flow of what Christianity is about? You know, with the structure of what Christianity is about. That's a first one, a little intuitive, but that, you know. Secondly, can you pray it? You know, can you celebrate it? You know, is it something that ultimately can be put into words and actions of prayer? Thirdly, does it work in practice? Does it lead you to loving service? Does it lead you to authentic living? Does it lead you to the Paschal mystery? You know, does it stretch you in a way that it brings new life? You know, so the criterion of orthopraxis, you know, to use a big word. And then fourthly, is it humble enough to be challenged by other sectors of the church, by church authority, by other theologies, by other theologians, by other contextual theologies? And then fifthly, is it strong enough to challenge other theologies, other expressions of the faith in other parts of the church? You know, I think that there may be more criteria. I'm just really laying out something I lay out in my book, Models of Contextual Theology, which I actually stole from my colleague Robert Schreiner. But I think these are good criteria. You know, which again, it's never perfect, but they are measuring sticks. You know, over against which you can do this, and I think that will help. That, you know, a contextual theology will be, you know, not trendy or not harmful or not divisive or anything like that. You know, I think those are, you know, it's really important, you know, that we recognize that we're dealing with something that is difficult and dangerous, as important as it is, as necessary as it is, you know, and that we always have these criteria.
See a couple of hands going up just as I was. Let's have two final questions and then we shall have some tea and coffee.
Can I just respond to the last point you made?
Sure.
From the context that I'm in.
Uh-huh.
And that is that the Anglican Church in New Hampshire in
mm-hmm.
America
mm-hmm.
might well, criteria four might
mm-hmm.
be a bit doubtful as to whether they were humble enough
mm-hmm.
in the first place
mm-hmm.
to be challenged.
Right. Right.
Might meet the other four criteria.
Uh-huh.
The Anglican Church in Nigeria or Uganda
mm-hmm.
Would have enormous difficulty with all five of the criteria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And
right.
there's a sense in which the question of the sexuality question within
yeah,
the
yeah.
community is
yeah.
one, or has been
yeah,
presented
yeah.
one, of contextual theology.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder where what you say fits with that.
Mm-hmm.
And also the sense that part of the contextual theology of the Anglican Church in Africa is actually coming from the rock out of which they were hewn, which was not an African rock in the first place.
Exactly.
I think we've got about
yeah.
2 minutes to...
Yes. Oh, well, let's just not talk about that. No, that's I mean it's interesting how this question comes up in almost every group that I speak, because it is seen as an issue of contextual theology, which it, of course it rightly is. And I think personally that the jury is still out, and it has to be still out. And you know, and I don't know whether what they did in New Hampshire is right or whether it is terribly wrong. I mean, I honestly don't know. And I don't think that the church should know yet either. I think there's a lot to be thought about, a lot to be discussed about. I mean, one of the things that I think about, and I don't know if this makes sense to all of you, but in terms of, you know, just to throw it out, a friend of mine talks about how the whole of Catholic moral theology or moral standards in sexuality were finalized and complete before the discovery of the ovum. You know, so in other words, a whole theology of sexuality was built up on what today we would call a very inadequate biology. Now, that doesn't mean that Catholic teaching is wrong, you know, automatically, you know, but it also doesn't mean automatically it's right. And so, you know, I think, you know, homosexuality, for instance, comes out of a particular understanding of biology, you know, if that biology is wrong, does that still make a difference? You know, do we have to revise our perspectives or not? And that's what I think. You know, I think we need a lot more discussion, a lot more reflection, a lot more prayer, a lot more openness, a lot more struggle with all of this. And maybe in 100 years we'll look back and we'll say, you know, well, wasn't it great how, you know, the Church of Nigeria took this heroic stand, that in the face of everything, you know, they, you know, it's like it's like Athanasius, you know, in Alexandria, you know, the whole world is Arian, you know, and he, you know, is there, and then he gets exiled, you know, what is 5 times he was exiled for his stand, but he stood firm, and we could say now he was right, they were wrong, you know, is that, or will it be the other way around, you know, I don't know, but I mean, I think you see the issues that are developed here. We shouldn't be so clear that this is it, end of discussion. I think we have a lot more discussion to go through. That's what I think. No.
Well, I think someone else wasn't there. I mean, reacting to the last one, having been in Africa, the African tradition certainly fuels a great difficulty in really understanding people not intending to have children,
mm-hmm.
let alone homosexuality.
Yes.
So you say this has just
yeah.
been done on the West. That really will not do. That really will not do. It is false. It is patronizing. It is arrogant. all the other questions are up for grabs, but you know, let's not have that, please. I was just thinking, in some ways, you know, going back to the earlier question and your criteria,
yeah.
I mean, they do bring us up, don't they, to issues of relationship with scripture, relationship with tradition, relationship with the magisterium.
Yes, yes.
Now, I mean, how do you respond to the role of the magisterium
mm-hmm.
in from a Catholic point of view, as a controller, a normative value in responding to contextual theologies?
The easy answer is I have a whole chapter in my new book where I deal with this, and I deal specifically with this. The other thing is that I think, obviously I'm a Catholic. I remain a Catholic. I'm proud to be Catholic. I accept the magisterium as such, you know. But I'm also a theologian. And as it goes back to a talk I heard when I was in the Philippines by the then Archbishop of Manila, Cardinal Sin, lovely name, Cardinal Sin. But anyway, he talked about theologians and magisterium. He said, what you have to realize is that, you know, the church is like a car. And somebody has to put on the gas and somebody has to put on the brakes. He says, if you only have brakes, you don't get anywhere. If you only put on the gas, you crash into the wall. He said, the magisterium is like the brake, the theologian is like the gas pedal. You know, and you need both, and you have to coordinate both. And he says, you know, if you don't have both, you know, and it's always going to be intention, of course, you know, and always a question of the judgment of the driver, which we hope is Christ, that both are needed. You know, if we just had theologians, God knows where we would be. You know, if we just had magisterium, you know, the same thing. You know, and so we really do need both, and there has to be a creative tension and a creative fidelity on both sides, I think. That's how I would see it. Now, that's theoretically, you know, in nitty-gritty issues, you know, it gets really, it gets hard and difficult and messy and complex. But at least those are the principles that I would work on. But I say more in my book about that, because I feel like in an introduction to theology and global perspective, you have to talk about authority. And as Catholic, I have to talk about the magisterium. So.
Steve, thank you very, very much. I think with that metaphor of the theological task as acceleration, we shall move to tea and coffee. But I would like to thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
On behalf of everybody. Say that we have leaflets of a conference that's happening in Denmark, and we're very fortunate also to have one of the organisers who's rushing off for a train. But if you want to catch Andreas Nielsen and hear more about church and mission in a multi-religious third millennium, or to take one of these leaflets, please do. It's happening in January. I just want to say, earlier this year, that